Welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, coming up in this hour, science fiction. Later on, a 1956 episode of X-1, but first it's Exploring Tomorrow with the Robert Silverberg story, The Mimic, heard on the Mutual Broadcasting System on March 19, 1958.
Sometimes it's fun to try to pitch yourself against a puzzle. Try considering tonight's story as a puzzle. It's a story about a monster. That's a familiar theme in science fiction and fantasy. But tonight's story deals with an impossible monster. See if you understand enough of the relationship of living things to figure out why this monster is impossible. When men go out into space, sooner or later in their explorations, they're going to meet somewhere on some world something that's mighty darn dangerous. And the real danger is that it might be brought home unknowingly. That's a kind of unpleasant thought at times, isn't it? Wonder how deadly, how disastrous a thing might be brought home.
Past 10. Marge, when is this brother of yours getting here? Midnight?
Oh, Dave, don't start getting upset about it. Son's a little late. Don't forget it's 5 years since he was last on Earth.
5 years or no 5 years. The ship landed 7:30. It doesn't take 3 hours to get here from the spaceport.
Well, maybe there's some routine he had to go through before he could leave the customs. I understand there's a comprehensive medical examination for all returning from outer space.
That's all we need. Some weird disease he picked up on Alpha Centauri 5.
No, they wouldn't let him near civilians if he had any such disease.
Well, all I can say is that if he doesn't show his face here by 11, I'm going to go upstairs and go to bed. I need my sleep.
Oh, there he is now, Dave. Oh, I knew he'd be here on time. That'd be nice to him, Dave. He is my brother, after all. I haven't seen him since 89.
Okay, I'll be polite. I'll go let him in. Come on, right on in. My name is Dave Sporley.
Thanks. I appreciate this, Dave.
Oh, Ted. Oh, Ted.
Hello, sis. Well, stand back and let me look at you. This is a big girl now, isn't she?
Well, I'm almost 24. I married Dave 3 years ago.
Well, you haven't changed much in 5 years. Same red hair, that dimple, freckles on your nose.
Was there much red tape before you could leave customs?
Just a medical exam. They gave me a quick look to make sure I wasn't carrying the plague. I was cleared through around 8:15.
Oh, you must have stopped off for a little nip before coming here then, huh?
No, I came straight here from the spaceport.
Oh, but it only takes half an hour by rocket tube.
No one said anything to me about a rocket tube. I took the subway.
The subway? Oh, really? Now the subway all the way out here? No wonder it took you so long.
Say, the rocket tube's only been in operation for 3.5 years.
Yeah.
That's why Ted didn't use it.
Yeah.
He didn't know it existed.
The world changes more than you think in 5 years. The new model autos that drive themselves, 3D video, the robots. Those things were all new when I last was on Earth. Now they're commonplace to everyone except me.
Come on into the living room. You'll probably want to rest up. I'll give you a drink, put a little music on.
And you can tell us all about your 5 years in space.
Bedanov, hmm? You miss him out in space.
Hey, can I dial you a drink?
Scotch, thanks. I'll take a neat.
Same old Ted. Still likes the same music and still drinks the same kind of drink.
It's only been 5 years. I haven't been away forever.
Can you tell us where you've been? Or is that classified?
Well, some of it is. But I covered a lot of ground. You ought to see the night sky on Deneb 9, Marge. 500 little moons up there like whirling knives in the darkness. From the 17th planet of the Vega system, 2 billion miles from its sun, and yet there's that great blazing light in the sky, so bright that we had to wear special eyelids.
Join the Space Force and see the galaxy. It's really true.
Gee, it's good of both of you to offer to put me up while I'm on ground leave. No treat to be in a world where you have no friends and only one living relative.
Oh, I don't mention it, Ted. How long did you say that you were staying?
3 weeks. That's all right with you.
And then you go back to space for another 5 years?
That's right. Survey trip this time, around the galactic rim.
How exciting that must be.
Just a job, after all, Mike.
Well, but how much more exciting it must be to be a spaceman than a newspaper man.
You a newspaper man, Dan?
I work for one of the system-wide news services.
That's a job that keeps humming all the time. We spacemen spend three quarters of our time drifting through nowhere between planets, playing solitaire, watching old films and thinking about Earth.
Yes, but when the waiting's over, when you finally reach another sun and walk on alien soil...
Yes, then it becomes worthwhile.
Well,
you must excuse me. I've had a busy day. Aboard ship and then getting out here.
Of course. If you'd like me to show you up to the room, why...
I appreciate that. Gee, this house is so full of new gadgets that I hardly know what anything does. Now, this thing over here...
Watch out, don't...
My arm's all right, Lauren.
Look, that was the raw disposal unit.
Hmm?
Anything you put in there gets converted into energy.
Well, look, I pulled my arm back in time, see?
Yeah, but we heard the sound. When you activate the unit, it crackles like that.
And I saw your hand in there after the wrist thing.
You're both imagining things. All I did was toss a piece of candy in to see what would happen. My hand didn't come anywhere near it.
But I saw your hand go in, Ted. And the disposal field crackled. And yet your hand, all right? I don't understand it.
I tell you, my hand didn't come anywhere near it, Marge. Dave, would you show me to my room? I'm pretty worn out.
But I saw his hand go in. I saw it.
Living organism, anywhere, is to be able to meet its environment, to survive, to handle the situations it encounters, handle them at least well enough to maintain its own existence as a species. It's not so obvious that you can overdo that, but you know you can.
His arm moved in upstairs in the guest room. Seems pleased with the layout.
Well, suppose we turn in now. It's past 11, isn't it?
Dave, I'm worried.
About what? That business about the disposal unit? Oh, it must have been our imagination.
No, no, I saw him clearly put his hand into that field. But when he took it out again, his hand was whole. And there are other things.
Like what?
He's different somehow, Dave.
Different? Well, sure he's different. 5 years.
No, it's not just the 5 years. His voice isn't quite the same anymore. Something weird about the way he speaks now. And his eyes, they have a faraway look. Oh, he was never like that before. Davey changed. And I'm afraid of him now.
You're afraid of your own brother?
I'm afraid that he isn't my own brother anymore.
Oh,
Davey, no, I don't know what I'm saying, I guess, but... Well, I do feel strange about his being upstairs. As if something dangerous had entered our house.
What should I do about it? Go upstairs and ask him if he's a monster in disguise? Oh, Marge, he's your brother, and you invited him here.
No, but I'm worried.
And what am I supposed to do about it? It really, believe me, it's all in your imagination.
Dave, didn't you see him stick his hand into that disposal?
No, I didn't.
But you said... You're just making that up. You saw it as clear as I did.
What do you want me to do? Do you want me to go upstairs and ask him to leave? He can spend his furlough in some hotel.
No, of course we can't do that.
Well, then leave me alone.
But would you do one thing for me?
What is it?
Go upstairs to his room. He probably isn't asleep yet, but maybe he's getting undressed. And try to get a look at him. My brother had a scar on his chest about 5 inches long, starting from his left collarbone and running down diagonally. He got it when we were kids. And see if the man upstairs has that scar, too.
No, look, Marge, you said that he liked the same drinks and the same music he always did. So why...
Why'd you go upstairs and look? You could tell him you just stopped in to see if he was comfortable.
This is ridiculous, Marge. Spying on your own brother to see if he's a thing from outer space.
I'll feel happier if you go up. Oh, won't you, Dave?
All right. If it'll stop you from worrying, I'll go see if he's awake. I saw your light was still on, Ted, so I figured I'd stop
there. Why do you enter my room without knocking?
Wait. Your face is...
My face is different.
You look like me now. My face, that is, not yours.
I'm simply practicing.
Practicing?
Oh, don't go away. Come here, Dave.
What are you?
I'm your brother-in-law, Dave.
What's your face? And your hands.
Didn't Marge tell you that I had such abilities?
No, of course not. Well,
I guess she didn't know. I couldn't do things like this before I visited Altair 6 2 years ago. Altair has a very interesting form of native life. At the moment, nobody knows of the existence of this life form but me. It's a mimic.
Mimic?
When a spaceman known as Ted Kennedy was exploring Altair 6 2 years ago, he wandered off alone to look for wildlife. There was a big brown stone in his way. He kicked it. But the stone clung to his boot. It wasn't a stone, you see. It was a mimic.
I don't know what you're talking about. Get out of my way and let me out of this room. You must be out of your mind.
Ted Kennedy never knew what happened to him. Within 10 seconds, the mimic had absorbed him. Swallowed him up. Flesh, brain, memories and all. When the mimic had fed, it realized what a lucky find it had made. A spaceman would be going back to Earth someday. The mimic can divide itself infinitely. It left part of itself there in its old disguise of a stone. The rest of it went back to the spaceship disguised as Ted Kennedy.
Marge said you were different, that something had happened to him.
I have all of Ted Kennedy's memories. As far as anyone can tell, I am Ted Kennedy, right down to the last molecule. And my crew members, who were all absorbed by the mimic and who are on leave now...
Oh, a whole ship of you spreading all over the Earth.
Exactly. Come here, Dave.
Not an army!
Don't try to resist. Just take seconds,
Marge,
Dave.
Marge! Marge!
Just a moment Marge. More, and then we'll be over.
Marge!
There. Finished. Could live high, couldn't they?
Ted, you were gone a long time. I was getting worried.
He wasn't undressed yet. I had to wait to see the scar.
Well, he had it then, did he?
Of course. Big purple slash across his chest when he got cut the time he tried to climb that picket fence.
You mean he told you how he got that scar then?
What? Oh, yeah. He told me all about it, how you and he were stealing apples years ago and how the farmer came to chase you. He jumped over the fence, but he cut himself going over, and you were stuck in the orchard because you couldn't get over the fence.
And he told you that?
Yes.
He never told anyone that story. He was so ashamed that he left his kid sister behind him and tried to get away. And he made me swear that I'd never tell anyone about it.
Well, he told me.
I guess 5 years does change a man. Well... It's almost midnight now. You'll be dead in the morning if you don't get some sleep, Dave. Come on, let's turn in.
Just a minute, Marge.
Dave, why are you looking at me that way?
Here.
I am here.
No, closer. Let me hold you in my arms.
Oh, why so lovey-dovey here in the living room, Dave? Dave, you look so strange.
Let me hold you.
Dave, your eyes, you look different. What's wrong with you? What happened to you upstairs? What's going on in this house?
Let me hold you, Marge.
Let go of me. You're holding me too tight, Dave.
Just a moment, Marge, and then you'll be one of us.
Dave, what are you doing to me? Dave, I don't understand it. You're hurting me.
Only a moment more before absorption, then you'll be part of us, Marge, you and me and Ted, and soon the whole world.
Dave, no!
Marge. No! That's all there is to it, see? A few moments while our organism absorbs yours, then a split, and a new Marge Spaulding appears.
It's odd. I remember everything I did as Marge, clear and sharp. Only now I'm you too, Dave. and Ted. And all the members of Ted's ship crew.
And soon, everyone in the world. All merged into us.
I see it's all over. I waited until you had converted us.
Yeah, we'd better sleep now, build up our energy, and every time tomorrow we get someone alone...
We convert him into us.
Simple. Quick. All this food waiting for us on this planet. Billions of human beings. All ours. Answer it.
Why, it's Mr. Adams from next door.
Hello there, Mr. Spaulding. I know it's late at night, and I hope I'm not intruding, but I was just coming home from the movies, and as I passed by outside, it sort of seemed to me that I heard screams coming from in here.
Yes, that's right. It was my wife screaming.
Mrs. Spaulding? But you seem so calm. I mean, well, I guess everything's under control.
Yes, everything is under control.
Yes, well, if that's the case, I'll just hardly be going on along home, then. I'm sorry to have bothered you. I just thought maybe you might be needing some help.
We appreciate that very much, Mr. Adams. Won't you step in for a moment?
Well, it's quite late, and as you say, everything's under control.
All the same, if you'd come inside.
Yes, do come in. I'll fix you a little nightcap.
Well, just for a moment. I've always believed in being neighborly. I guess I'll come in if you're nice enough to ask me.
We're glad to have you, Mr. Adams. Here, don't stand in hall. Come in. Close the door.
Well, it's nice of you to ask me in, Mrs. Pauling. Yes, sir. Right nice of you to invite me in.
Then there'd be nothing to eat but tigers. They aren't good eating, I understand, even for a tiger. What do you think would happen to a monster on any planet, which is just an island in space, that became so successful that nothing could fight it? It would starve to death, of course. That's an impossible kind of monster. There never could be such a monster as is discussed in this story.
Exploring Tomorrow on Tuned to Yesterday from March 19th, 1958 on the Mutual Broadcasting System. That story penned by Robert Silverberg, who had two stories featured on that same series the following month, Sound Decision, heard on April 2nd, and Overpopulation, heard on April 9th, 1958. Here's an excerpt.
How did you enjoy the rush hour subway ride?
It was a nightmare.
I've given you as good a sample of Earth's life as is possible in a single day. You've seen much of North America, but it's worse elsewhere. Why, in Asia alone...
Please, please, Miss McLaren, no more statistics. You've made your point over and over again.
I'm sorry if I've tired you. But I wanted to show you the contrast between Earth and your own uncrowded planet. And now I appeal to you, Mr. Rockwood, in the name of the humanity that's common to all our worlds.
You want us to let you send overflow masses to us?
But we built those colonies as a safety valve for overpopulation. And now that we need to use that valve, it's shut tight. Mr. Rockwood, I'm a reasonable man. I know we're asking something that amounts to an imposition, but I beg you...
I agree. Earth is terribly overcrowded. The population of Venus is about 700 million. Mars has about a billion. Callisto, 300 million. Now, these figures are close to the peak of optimum population. And since our death rates are low, thanks to medical advances, we have to keep a careful watch over birth rates to maintain normal population distribution.
I ask you to
let... Now, hear me out, please. We're deeply moved and sympathetic to your plight. We wish we could help you. We feel pity, the pity we would have for, well, for an idiot who, given a loaded gun, proceeds to blow his brains out.
What did you say?
I knew how overcrowded Earth was before I took your little tour. But we haven't grown overcrowded and won't. Why? Because we have small worlds, smaller than Earth. We can't allow ourselves to breed at Earth's rate. We see the inescapable need for certain self-restrictions.
You don't see the moral obligation to accept some of our excess people?
We see a moral obligation to refuse. To force you to see your real problem and its solution.
I am empowered by the General Assembly, Mr. Rockwood, to exert any means within my power to make you change your mind. And Earth, I'm afraid, has more armed vessels than your three worlds combined.
So you're threatening war?
Not war. Survival.
You have country estates, rolling green fields, and we don't have an inch of free space.
So you'll fight to make us let you in.
You're bigger fools than I thought. 14 billion of you crammed onto one world, and a mere 2 billion of us scattered over three. Why, a war would ruin you. We'd bomb you in a shotgun spray and knock off 100,000 no matter where we struck. While you'd have to pry us out of nooks and crannies. We'd lose perhaps 100 million people, but you'd lose billions. I think we could risk it.
So you won't yield. You'd risk war, even. You won't take colonists.
When we colonize the stars, we shall do it differently. The stars? Yes, you're counting on them as your last hope. But do you seriously think colonizing the stars can help your population problem? Oh, look, Mr. McClellan, even if you invented a workable star drive tomorrow, it would take 5 years before the first ships got off the ground. You're adding 500,000 a day. Now, how many people would these ships hold? 1,000 each? With 500,000 new births a day, you wouldn't be able to ship people to the stars fast enough to keep up. The math's against you, sir. You'd have to run as fast as you could just to stay where you are.
I suppose there's no further negotiation we can do, Mr. Rockwood. I'll arrange for your immediate return to your home planet.
Well, will you think about what I've said?
I'll think about it, yes. But we have 14 billion people on Earth.
Mr. McClellan, we're not anxious for war. But your threat doesn't scare us either. We'll fight to defend our way of life. And we'll win, sir. Good day, Mr. McClellan.
An excerpt of Exploring Tomorrow with Robert Silverberg's story, No Way Out. This is an hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for X-1 with the story $1,000 a Plate. First heard on NBC on the 21st of March, 1956.
X-1, fire. Horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on 1,000 maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company presents X-1. Tonight's story, $1,000 a Plate by Jack McKenty.
Ferry ship from Dema Space Station carrying cargo and passengers from Earth now arriving in Blasting Pit 6. Radiation clearance and quarantine officers report to passenger conveyor. Mars Airways to New Chicago, Port Kelly, Marsport, Marsport Park, New Amityville, and Nova Massapequa. Takeoff in 15 minutes. All aboard.
Excuse me, sir. Could you help me?
Sure, buddy. What'll it be? Cards? Dice? A little shot of distilled hackleberry?
No, I just wondered if you could direct me.
Brother, you came to the right man. I can direct you anywhere you want to go. That's what I'm here for. You just get off the ferry?
Yes, I came on the Phobos Queen.
Yeah, yeah. You know you can spot him in my business. All right, what'll it be now?
Well, I want to know how I can get to the observatory.
The what?
The Mars Observatory. You know, the Astronomical Research Center.
Well, what do you want to go there for?
I work there, or at least I will.
No kidding. Mm-hmm. You're one of them double-dome stargazers, huh?
Yes. I'm an astronomer.
Yeah. I heard there was a lot of you guys out there under glass, but I don't get out of town much. I got to keep my hand in, you know. Are you sure you wouldn't like a little flutter before you settle down in your rut?
No, no. I never play cards. Occasionally a little chess.
Uh-huh. I don't know if they got any chess in any of the casinos, but if you want, I could arrange it. You know, play against the house, $5 apiece for the kitty and a C-note for checkmate.
Thank you. Can you direct me to the observatory?
Well, you'll have to get a sand hack. None of the regular buses go by there. They just hit the casinos on the strip. Hey, I'll tell you what. The next ferry won't clear for another half hour. I'll walk you over to the hack stand.
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you, Mr.
Just call me Pusher. It's on account of my occupation, you know.
Oh, I see. I'm Enright C. Bensinger, Dr. Bensinger.
Well, it's a pleasure, Doc. Right this way.
Well, this isn't exactly what I expected.
Your first trip to Mars, huh?
Yes, it is.
Well, you'll get used to it. Out this way. Adjust your gills.
Gills?
Sure. But what do you think you're going to breathe outside that door? There isn't enough oxygen on Mars to keep a mouse alive. They gave you a standard issue when you got off the ferry. It's in that bag.
Oh. Yes, I'm afraid I was reading when they explained it. The quarterly journal from the Harvard Observatory, you know.
Hmm? Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I never miss a copy. Now, look, you put the nose clip in, see, and crack the valve. This way it compresses enough air to keep you going. Okay? All right, let's go. Cold.
Sure, it's cold.
Sand hacks are right up the street there.
Beautiful. Beautiful. All the colors in the sky. I am surprised, though, in an atmosphere this thin, the sunset shouldn't be as spectacular.
That ain't the sunset, Chief. That's the new sign on top of the Canal Casino. Right there behind you, see?
Hmm? Fun. Fun. Fun.
Yeah, but if you want a square shake with the dice, you go to Harry Harvey's place. The Red Sands Hotel.
I suppose the seeing is excellent.
You're telling me. You know, he's got a line of girls like you never see nowhere else.
Oh, I'm afraid I meant astronomical seeing. For telescopes, you know.
Hey, you got an idea there. Telescopes.
What's that?
Nothing. Fireworks. The Mardi Gras.
The what?
Mardi Gras. You know, big party all over town. Parade, costumes, liquor, fireworks, gambling. You know, big celebration.
Well, what's the occasion?
An eclipse of the two moons.
Oh, but that occurs very frequently.
Oh, sure. You'd be surprised how much a Mardi Gras ups the take on the strip. Well, here the sand hacks, and look, don't let them hackies charge you more than $15 for the trip. Just tell them you know me. Just tell them Pusher sent you.
Gentlemen, I want you all to meet Dr. Bensinger, our new colleague. These are Dr. Spitz, Spiegel, Ortney, and Klein. I'm sorry to introduce you to our team at such a critical moment, but our situation is rather desperate.
Well, I'm afraid I don't understand.
Spiegel, show Dr. Bensinger your plate.
Here, just look at this. Just look. It took me 8 weeks working with a computer to plot this plate, and look, look.
Well, it seems fogged. These streaks, I don't believe I've ever seen them on an astronomical photograph before. What are they?
Skyrockets, that's what they are. Skyrockets. Morton, I tell you that they fired them in our direction on purpose.
Oh, all right. Calm down, Spiegel.
Calm down? Do you realize that it will be 12 years before this particular conjunction can be photographed again? Morton, you've got to do something.
Couldn't you write a little note to the Chamber of Commerce and ask them to eliminate the fireworks?
We've written a note every time a small boy lets off a Roman candle, and it was no use.
I tell you, they fire them this way on purpose.
I'm afraid that's true. The other directions around town are either oil refineries or homes of the casino owners.
I don't suppose there's any chance of moving the observatory then out into the desert.
My dear Dr. Bensinger, we'd have to bring in crews to tear it down, other crews to move it and set it up, not to mention breakage and replacement, which would involve more freight from Earth at $7.97 per pound, dead weight. As it is, the immense costs add up to a staggering total. Do you know what a single photographic plate costs us, counting overhead? $1,000.
Well, then what is the answer?
Another letter to the town council, I suppose. Let me write it this time, Dr. Morton. My grandmother used to have several rather picturesque phrases, which I believe I could translate.
No, Spiegel. Dignity, remember? We are an adjunct of Harvard University. Dr. Spiegel, I shall ask you and Dr. Benziger to accompany me in person to the town council. Surely they cannot turn down a rational request in the interest of science.
Well, gentlemen, the town council appreciates the problem.
Yes, I felt certain it would. Naturally, you're aware of the importance of astronomical research, Mr. Harvey.
Well, I can see your point, Doc. You sit out there in your little glass hut, pointing your brownie camera up at the stars, snapping away. But you got to look at our point of view. Now you take my place. Harvey's Red Sands. I got a heavy investment. 14 crap tables, a half a dozen roulette wheels, and the rest of the overhead. I got to keep them wheels running. It's the Mardi Gras that drags the suckers in.
But really, Mr. Harvey, we were just asking you to curtail the pyrotechnic display.
Now, wait just a minute. I'm as clean living as the next guy.
Oh, Dr. Benziger means the fireworks.
Oh. Well, I'd like to help you out, boys, but I look at it this way. Those stars you're looking at are going to be up there for a couple of thousand years. But a sucker is different. You got to grab him while he's still healthy.
But in the interest of science. Surely the town council can't agree with you.
Doc, the town council's made up of Joe Rocco, Pete Carney, Alex the Armenian, and me. We own the four biggest houses in town. So go ahead, fellas. Take all them snapshots you want to. And if you happen to lower your telescope, get a couple of good ones through a window of the Grand Canal Hotel. I'll take a couple of 8x10 enlargements. I'll see you around, Doc.
Well, I'm afraid the town council was no help.
They just remain insensible to reason.
Well, I'm afraid the only thing those gentlemen understand is money.
My dear Dr. Benziger, the smallest bet allowed in Mr. Harvey's establishment is approximately the same as your monthly salary.
Oh. Dr. Morton, suppose the gambling operators were suddenly to lose a great deal of money.
They never do.
Of course, with the ordinary layman playing against them. But suppose the best scientific brains were to concentrate on a simple matter like the probabilities of a given roulette wheel, or the combinations and permutations applicable to a game of poker. We could put the main computer on it.
Doctor, are you seriously suggesting...
Well, I think he's got a point. If we could give those casinos a shellacking, they might stop the fireworks just to get rid of us.
Now, let me get this straight, Doc. All you eggheads up there made up a kitty to get into a crap game?
Well, that's right. I thought you might direct me to the largest establishment, Mr. Harvey's place, I believe.
Now, look, Doc, come over here. Mm-hmm. Now, over here in the corner. Mm. Now, look, I'm a pusher. See, my job is to take these tourists by the lapel and shove them in front of a dice table quick before they spend any of their letters foolishly on food and lodging. But these rubes, they come here expecting to get tilted. They don't miss it, you understand? It's all part of a good time. But you guys, out there running your Harvard peekaboo racket, you're different. Now, what do you want to get mixed up in this for? You take your penis home and shove it in the piggy bank. Save up and buy yourself a new telescope or something.
I appreciate your solicitude, Mr. Pusher, but I'm quite determined. Which way is Mr. Harvey's place?
Well... if you've made up your mind, the bus leaves from right over there in about 15 minutes. Get a round-trip ticket, because Mr. Harvey don't want no suckers stuck without they got car fare away from his place.
I shouldn't worry about that. Frankly, I expect to leave Mr. Harvey flat broke. I'll see you just before dawn.
I don't understand it. I just don't understand it.
But what happened?
Luckily, a certain Mr. Pusher was generous enough to lend me $15 for a sand hack. Otherwise, I would have had to walk.
Well, that was rather decent of him.
Well,
Not exactly. He says he gets a percentage when he pulls in a ripe chump.
You mean it's all gone?
Every dollar. I just can't understand it. I kept careful notes. I followed the formula that was worked out by the computer. I calculated the odds by slide rule, carrying them to the fourth and fifth decimal place. I just can't understand it. Mr. Pusher said that I had a frigid digit.
A what?
A cold finger. I gather that's the opposite of a hot hand.
But according to the game theory as outlined in the last International Congress of Theoretical Mathematics...
Unfortunately, at the last Mathematical Congress, they weren't trying to make a four the hard way.
There they go again, skyrockets. I was hoping to get at least three plates in before they started.
And the crushing blow occurred when Mr. Pusher offered to sell me my horoscope.
No.
Yes.
Oh.
He said anyone was a fool to get into a dice game if the stars weren't right.
Now, there's an example of what we're up against. Medieval superstition existing side by side with hydrazine rockets and nuclear space drive. Shocking!
I'm not so sure. Might be a good idea.
Dr. Morton sent for the staff psychiatrist. Benzinger has scratched his reflector.
No, no, gentlemen. Pusher was right. Every man who's going to gamble should have a horoscope. It's very important to know what the stars say.
What are you talking about?
And where on Mars is the place best equipped to tell you what the stars say?
Oh, no.
Dr. Benzinger.
Gentlemen, I tell you, it may be a stroke of genius. Hello? Is this the advertising office? This is Dr. Benzinger. I should like to place an ad. No. No, there will be no pretty girl. Just this. Free. For the first time ever, your horoscope scientifically cast by the staff of the famous Mars Observatory. Learn your luck, your future. Write or call Mars Observatory. No charge, no obligation. Yes, thank you. I'd like to run that every day until further notice.
Pusher.
Yeah, Mr. Harvey.
Did you do like I said?
Yes, sir. I went out to the observatory just like you told me. You know, I had to share the sand hack with five other guys. I understand the bus company's putting a route out there.
A big crowd, huh?
Sure, Mr. Harvey. You know, them horoscopes they're giving there, the only thing on Mars that don't cost the tourists any money.
All right. What happened?
Well, when I got out there, there was this Doc Benzinger, you see, all dressed up in a dunce cap with stars on it or something, in a big robe. They showed us all around the place. You never saw telescopes as big as that.
All right. Skip the travelogue.
All right. Well, finally, they took my name and my birth date, my collar size, and they run it through this computer. You should have seen that thing. Lights and bells. I'm telling you, it looked like the biggest pinball machine you ever saw. I kept waiting for it to tilt.
The horoscope.
Yeah, well, they give it to me finally. I mean, the first couple of pages is the ordinary bourgeois about the sun and the moon and the stars. But on the fourth page, that's the kicker.
What'd it say?
Well, it said that I'd be real lucky at most of the gambling places, but I'd lose my shirt at... Boss, you're not going to like this.
Go ahead.
I'd lose my shirt if I played at Harry Harvey's place.
Huh. Pretty shrewd. You know, for a bunch of scientists, they're pretty smart. That isn't going to work. Who in his right mind is going to pay attention to a lot of hooey like that?
Sure, Mr. Harvey. Can I go now?
What's your hurry?
Well, I'm going over to Purple Flamingo to play a little poker. I mean, after all, they say I'll be lucky any place but here. I mean, you know, you can't argue with science.
Gentlemen, I think we're on our way. I checked Mr. Harvey's establishment. You could shoot an elk in the gambling room.
Empty, eh?
There was nobody playing but an elderly masochist who likes to lose.
Dr. Morton, we have a visitor.
Benzinger, I have asked you please to take off that confounded astrologer's hat when you come into my office. It embarrasses me.
Oh, I'm sorry. But, Doctor, allow me to present Mr. Harry Harvey.
Hiya.
How's business, Mr. Harvey?
Yeah. Well, look, gentlemen, let's put our cards on the table. You put a hole in my pocket... like I haven't had since I once ran into an honest police lieutenant in Cincinnati.
I presume you've come about our horoscope?
Yeah. Let's shoot or get off the foul line. How much?
I beg your pardon?
How much will you take to lay off?
Mr. Harvey, just a promise.
What?
You're on the town council, Mr. Harvey. Now, the next time the question of tourist entertainment is discussed, We want you to vote against any fireworks display.
Well, sure, that's no problem, but look, I'm only one vote.
Oh, don't worry, Mr. Harvey. Every one of the casino owners on the council will have his turn to be mentioned in the stars.
Yeah? You're going to knock us all one by one like a flight of ducks?
Well, that's the general idea.
I got to hand it to you. I got to take off my hat to you.
Mr. Harvey, we're desperate. We cannot afford to let valuable and irreplaceable photographic plates be spoiled by fireworks.
Okay, you win. But listen, here's $5.
$500? But we couldn't take it, Mr. Harvey. I've already explained.
It's not for me. I want you to take a full-page ad and do the purple flamingo in your next horoscope. I'd like to see Joe Rocco's face when he gets a load of it.
All right, Mr. Harvey. We'd be glad to take him next.
And one more thing before I go. Can I look through the telescope? I never looked through one before.
Well, that's the last of them. The Red Sands, Frankland's Paradise, the Martian Gardens, the Two Moon Club,
and the Purple Flamingo. Dr. Morton, we've got them all.
There will be a meeting of the town council a week from now, and after that, no more fireworks. All those beautiful stars and nebulae and not a misbegotten skyrocket to stand between us. Oh, beautiful.
Gentlemen, I have some news for you.
You have?
I am in receipt of an interplanetary radiogram from our parent organization, the Harvard Observatory.
Are they going to send the new mass spectroscope?
Please, please. Morton. Earth newspapers carrying accounts of horoscopes published by your organization. Very unscientific. Harvard Board of Overseers, aghast. Must stop at once. Find other solution. Signed, L.K. Bell, Director.
Well, I thought Thursday was the regular day for personal message delivery.
It is.
Oh, Mr. Harvey.
I asked Mr. Harvey to wait in the washroom. He brought the message down.
Oh, sure. All of us have contacts in the radio office. We can get a hold of messages a couple of days before they clear.
Did you come down to gloat over our misfortune, Mr. Harvey?
No. You got my promise to help you boys, and I'll stick by you. But the rest of them, well, it's tough, fellas, but business is business. I'm afraid the fireworks will go on as usual.
Thank you, Mr. Harvey.
Look, what would happen if you brought all the boys out here, showed them around, and then you could offer to name a star after them or something? I'd sure like to be able to point in the sky and say, that's Harvey's star.
Well, Mr. Harvey, I'm afraid any stars worth looking at with the naked eye already have names. Besides, Harvard Observatory wouldn't stand for this idea either. It would make as much sense to them as you naming a poker chip after me.
But, Dr. Morton, we've got to think of something. We tried rigging up a photoelectric cell. It closes the shutter when a rocket goes up, but it cuts the exposure time too much. But if we can't get these plates, we may not be able to duplicate them for years. Why, right now, they're preparing the first trip to a newly discovered planet. And the work of the observatory is necessary to ensure the success of that trip. Now, surely your colleagues will realize that, Mr. Harvey. The future of the human race is at stake.
Doc, the only race those jokers are interested in takes place at Tropical Park.
Look out there. They're starting the fireworks. All of them heading this way again.
No. It's nothing personal. It's just that if we point them any other way, they're likely to splash people. Or maybe set something on fire.
You mean if the rockets misfired and get the tourists all wet, there would be trouble?
Oh, sure. You couldn't have that. A guy with wet pants ain't going to stand around no crap table for hours.
Mr. Harvey, do you really want to help us?
Well, sure. I promised, didn't I?
Dr. Spiegel, do you think the research library would have any material on pyrotechnics?
Bensinger, what do you have in mind?
Well, Dr. Morton, I was thinking of fighting fire with fireworks. Careful with that match, Harvey.
Oh, don't worry. With the oxygen around here, you need a blowtorch to light a cigarette.
Have you got the rockets ready, Dr. Bensinger?
Well, here they are in the launching racks. I've got all my instruments, compass, a clinometer, an azimuthal radioscope, and a blowtorch.
Well, what are we waiting for?
Spiegel. He's bringing the calculated trajectories from the computer.
Say, I don't know if I like this. What if they miss? Or they go off too soon or something?
Oh, nonsense, Mr. Harvey. You forget.
We're scientists.
Here are the figures, Bensinger. We double-checked them on the master computer.
All right, then, let's go. They'll be starting the official fireworks in a minute.
Azimuth 360.3570.
Check.
Elevation 49.3740.
Check.
That's corrected for wind, velocity, temperature change, and magnetic eddy current.
Are you sure you guys know what you're doing with them skyrockets?
Don't worry, Mr. Harvey. They're going to explode in the Grand Canal and get everybody in the Canal Casino all wet. You shouldn't object. After all, it's your competition.
Coming up to 0 hour, Bensinger.
Light the torch.
5 seconds. 4, 3, 2, 1. Fire.
There they go.
Oh, interesting effect. That's a purple color.
Oh, do you like it?
Yes.
That was my idea. Radioactive fluoride. They're up over the town now.
Hey, one of them's beginning to wobble.
Oh, I can't understand that. The computer was absolutely certain.
It's going over the south of town.
The other one's tracking correctly on the radar. It'll hit the canal square.
Yeah, but look, the purple one. There it goes. It hit.
Looks like it's starting a fire.
Hey, must hit somebody's house. You can see it now. It's a house burning.
Oh, dear, dear. There must have been a weak tube in the computer.
Yeah. Some guy's going to be real sore. I can see it real clear with the glasses now. That house on top of the hill there by the Geeko bush. Boy, it's burning like...
Mr. Harvey, what's the matter?
That's my house!
Dr. Bensinger, I've called you in to read a letter that I've written to Mr. Harvey. Oh, do you know his address?
I believe he's staying at his gambling establishment. His house was a total loss.
Yes, well, yes. This has been a very difficult letter for me to write. I
believe the letter is academic, Dr. Morton. Mr. Harvey is outside.
Oh, he is?
With two very large gentlemen, with bulging pockets.
Oh, dear. Oh, dear. I don't know what to say. Well, Mr. Harvey, what a surprise.
You two apes, wait outside. Now, Dr. Morton, about those fireworks. I want you to know I believe in direct action. I don't like fiddling around.
Well, of course not.
I had some trouble with a bottom dealer from Lunar City. I didn't fool around. I sent him back to the moon in a cargo rocket. With no air.
How interesting.
Now, about your problem.
Are you sure? We apologize. I mean...
Apologize? That's great.
I just remembered I left a few plates in the bar.
Don't go away, Doctor. You're in on this, too.
No, there wouldn't be room. Not for two of us.
What are you talking about?
Well, in a cargo rocket, especially without air.
What? I'm trying to tell you. The council voted against fireworks.
No, as a matter of fact, I have a very bad sinus, and no air would definitely... What?
Oh, sure. We decided anything that could burn down an honest citizen's house was too dangerous. Very civic-minded, that council.
But I don't understand.
I kept my promise. I said I'd help you, and I did.
Well, I'm terribly embarrassed. We were trying to get a collection among the staff to help you pay for your loss, but I'm afraid the total assets of the observatory... wouldn't reconstruct your garage.
Yeah.
But we held a staff meeting, and we decided on a more permanent kind of remembrance. Mr. Harvick, on this photograph, you see this trail? This bright trail?
Oh, one of them skyrockets again. I'm sorry, Doc. It won't happen again.
No. This is no skyrocket. It's a comet. It will be quite bright for several months. And we decided to call it Harvey's Comet.
Harvey's Comet? Hey, that's real nice. Harvey's Comet. Hey, Doc, you put me on top of the world. Them boys at the Canal Casino boasting about their new sign? But me, I got a comet. Harvey's Comet. Why, every sucker on Mars will see it every night. It's the best advertisement since they wrote 7 down across the face of the moon.
Well, I'm glad that you're pleased.
Well, as a matter of fact, Doc, I kind of heard about it in advance from one of your boys. You named the comet after me? Okay. I brought something for you. Here.
What is it?
A poker chip from my place. Go ahead, read it.
Harvey's Club. Dr. Morton's poker chip. 5,000.
That's dollars, Doc. Don't spend it all in one place.
Tonight, by transcription, X-1 has brought you $1,000 a plate. A story written by Jack McKenty and adapted for radio by Ernest Kenor.
X-1, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 21st of March 1956 on NBC. And so closes this hour of sci-fi on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for tuning in.